Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. This is another show I hope that you find interesting about metaphysics and spirituality and science. Yes, that's included in the mix, as well as other things that you may want to speak about. And if you would like to call in, you can. The numbers are right on the screen before you. So I'm not going to repeat them because you've got them right there, easier for you to handle. Tonight I thought we would talk about the metaphysics of love. Now, you might say, well, you've kind of spoken about love before, but actually, I have only once, I think, and I can remember, and that's in a number of years, like 6-7 years, spoken about things dealing more with metaphysics of love. And I always do it a little different anyway, and besides which, there's so much to say, you really can't get it said in one of these shows. I thought it would also be interesting to include... I've had a couple emails dealing with the questions about love. I thought I would do these on the air, at least one or two of them, dealing with questions that some people have emailed me about in recent times. And so if you are one of the listeners who did that, hey, you're going to be able to hear some of the response I have to you on the air. Now, what do I mean by the metaphysics of love? I mean, this is certainly not exactly what you would say a kind of like a natural mix, because metaphysics is really kind of like the physics beyond normal physics. And it also is kind of scientific in a sense. And at the same time, there's some spirituality into that as well, which is going to be obvious as I define it. That doesn't seem to necessarily fit right in with what most people think of as a very emotional kind of explanation as far as love is concerned. And so most people would say, how do you mix those two together? Well, actually, I hope we'll say the middle of the show, most of you will have a better understanding of what I mean by that. And also, I'd like to mention, again, with the blessing and the, we'll say the giving, the loving of this station, BBS Radio, that they have allowed me to go a little longer tonight again, which is great. I'm going to go to 15 minutes after the hour, so we've really got about an hour and 15-minute show tonight, which is just terrific because that gives me more time and you more time to understand what it is I can hear about, right? Okay. So let me describe to you, what do I mean by love? Because I always like to start with some kind of definition of what the show is about, some kind of, something to define my understanding, which I agree is sometimes a little different than what a lot of people think. So, and of course, if you disagree, you can let me know. I would call love the ability in consciousness to see the similarities between us and others and to exercise in some way a response to others that helps to grow that similarity or commonness. So love is a state of inclusiveness which comes from a state of higher or heightening realms of consciousness. The more conscious we are, the more we can see and understand that those things around us are connected to us and the ways in which we are connected to them. And therefore, we perceive a desire to give in some way to these other things that we are conscious of as being connected. So the more conscious we are, the more we seek to love. And the less conscious we are, the less we do. Because if a person were very self-absorbed, selfish, and focused mostly on themselves, they would not have a very high consciousness because they wouldn't see the connections between themselves and everything else. And their sense of or desire to love or give in ways that are helpful and wise to others would be limited, maybe even non-existent. Very interesting. So this, and I'm giving you a general idea of love. Now, I'm going to talk about all kinds of love tonight, including intimate love, including love that brings two people so close together that they actually share each other's thoughts, feelings. They interact together as one. And this gets into, of course, sexuality. And so we're going to bring all of this into the picture this evening. So we have a basic understanding, maybe, of my definition of love, which is not just mine. I don't want you to think like, oh, gee, you can't get up with that. No, no, this has been around for a long time, but I'm bringing it up as the way that I agree with. All right, so if metaphysics is involved in this, then there is several things happening. The first is that it's somewhat repeatable based upon how it interacts or relates. So, first of all, we can define it, and I did define it to some extent. I'm going to define it a lot more. But it is definable. It is understandable in terms of a way it operates, and it is helpful to us to therefore learn these other ways so that we can enhance it in our life and in the lives of others, because love is desirable to have since it is connected to and is part of consciousness. It is also, now I'm going to add some more information here, the second part of God's, this is the spiritual part, mind. It's a second part. And actually, it's the second part of God's thought. There are three parts to God's mind, and I'll name them right now. They are will and choices and creativity and purpose. That's the first part. Joined to consciousness, planning, givingness, love, yeah, and inclusiveness, which is the second part. You put those together, and that creates thought. Now you've got the thought of our Creator when it's in the direction of the Creator's thought. Now, you can think in lots of ways that aren't like the Creator, but when you do that, you create all kinds of issues, forces, and problems. The third part, by the way, of God's mind is interaction, taking actions, and interacting with others. That requires energy. So we live in a universe that in some way has something to do with energy in this particular universe. Not all universes are like that necessarily, but that's where we are. Okay, these three parts, are, we live in this. We live in a sea of our Creator's mind, and we can choose to co-create with our Creator and create more of its thought. When we do that, we, as life, help to grow our Creator at the same time. So it's sort of like we're joining together with God to co-create more of the kinds of thought that God has and the kinds of interactions that God wants to promote. And we also have freedom, since that's the very first part. Freedom is the very first part of God's thought. And so we have freedom to either choose to do this or to not choose to do it. If we consistently choose to do it, then we call it will. That's our will. And if we consistently to choose not to do it, still will. But it's a negative will. It's against the Creator's thought. So all of that fits together with love, and love is right there in the second part. Without love, there would be a limit on consciousness, and we would fall most likely and fairly quickly into darkness and away from the thought of God. Well, that's not a good thing. So love is really important. Now, you might say, well, you talked about life. Not all things necessarily have love. Well, they do to some extent, but maybe we don't notice it. And the important thing to understand here is that human beings are very high up in the order of life relative to some things. And the other things that are life that may show very limited capacity to love are not nearly as conscious as human beings. They certainly aren't conscious of their own Creator. That's the uniqueness of being human and beyond. So for us, love is all of the things I've said. For some kinds of life, that, you know, if you're a worm or maybe a fly or something, you might have a very, 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 very small amount of love that you could maybe exercise in some ways. And most of that comes from the soul. Some people call it a group kind of soul that is behind a whole species of life forms. And so the individual species may have absolutely no contextual understanding of love other than its instincts, which comes from the thought of its soul. We have an independent individual soul, so we are free to think for ourselves, and therefore we don't have that kind of instinctual type of thought going on inside of us. Or our behaviors also are not necessarily truly instinct. We have drives, but not necessarily instincts. Okay, so getting back to what I was saying about love, because I'm just going, aren't I? If we want to consider this love being a part of the nature of God, then it is a spiritual message as well to not only love because we want to be more conscious, which I think is a good thing, there's nothing wrong with that, but also to be more godly, more spiritual. The spirit is the thought of our Creator. It's just another name for the thought of our Creator. So if we're going to be more spiritual, in metaphysical terms, it's the same thing as saying we want to be more conscious. And the two are very synonymous, so we could almost interchangeably talk about them, you know, ad hoc. We can substitute as we would like to. Now, if you want to use metaphysics in terms of science and physics, that's a whole different can of worms. Because there is a science in physics that actually does somewhat touch on what I'm describing, and that's called quantum physics. However, it's fairly complicated, and I don't know how far I want to really go with this tonight, because love is so hard to understand when you're trying to put it in terms of physics itself. I could just, for those of, I know there's going to be a few of you out there who probably email me or something, say, why don't you say more about the physics stuff? Okay, I'll give you like 30 seconds. So most of the audience is not going to understand this, but I know there's some of you out there who are big into this stuff, and they want me to say that science stuff. Yeah, I want to hear it. Okay. All right, so here it comes. And I will only say it once unless somebody calls and starts really nagging on me about it. But here it goes. If in quantum physics, we are both energy and which is like particles, and we're also, we'll call it like waves, all at the same time, both of those. And love responds more to the wave side of things, although it's still part of physicality in some issues, especially if you're talking about physical sexuality. But the most important thing about this is that love causes people's waves that are part of them to join with other people's waves and to match the other people's waves in amplitude. And when they do that, you get a thing called superposition and all kinds of interesting things start taking place where two people are actually literally becoming somewhat one. And with the old statement in many people's vernacular is like, well, we're all one. Well, that's true if we choose to love in wise ways that helps others to do the same. That's really a true statement. So you could probably go to the bank with that one. And quantum physics would support that. And then there's a real interesting thing that if you really, really love someone, and especially if there's sexual involvement, you can have a thing called entanglement. Now, only two people can do this at a time. And this is one of the reasons I write in some of the books I've written that you if you're going to be really loving, you have to be monogamous. That's a whole other story. But and then part of it is supported by quantum physics because only two things can actually be entangled at the same time. And so it's really interesting that you can actually become one with something to the point in physics now, quantum physics, where you're reaching a metaphysical state where consciousness is being shared thought is being shared, service to others is being shared, and a oneness in experiencing God is being shared, all at the same time. Amazing. Okay. Enough said. Okay, how's that? I just barely touched on it, just enough to get a couple of people yawn just now, and maybe the rest of you kind of rolled your eyes, and a few of you are saying, oh, where are we really talking about the science stuff? I like that. Okay, so we covered that. I'm not going to go any deeper in it because it's for another time, really, but I promise that we will actually have more shows on some of that really heady stuff, and also I'm writing a book about it, too, so... which will be on DVD, so you don't have to really read. You can just watch it. I'm going to be running around in outer space doing crazy stuff. Okay, so let's get back to the more metaphysics of the situation. Here we are. We're looking at a circumstance in which, in order to be closer and get really close to our universe and become one with others living within it, and to have the experience of being one with others. And that's the way you expand yourself after a certain point. The little self, the part of us that is kind of what a lot of people think of themselves as being, is very limited. If you want to really grow and become something vast in a metaphysical and spiritual sense, you've got to have enormous love, because that's what connects you to everything. That's what makes your consciousness and the consciousness of other things merge, and it allows eventually common perception. The common perception, again, comes from the ability to eventually connect the third part of God's mind, which is the more energy issues, and this gets get back into quantum physics, with others. And you actually could eventually perceive using other people's senses. You can think and gain in thought. Some of this is sometimes called intuitive or Buddhic thought, where you actually gain others' knowledge and are able to use that within your thought just because you're focused 100% out in service to other people. In order to do that, you do need to be 100% focused out. So, you know, if you think that, you know, like positive thinking or, you know, the Course on Miracles or something is going to get you there, it probably isn't. Because to achieve these results, you have to really commit yourself to be fully 100% willing to serve others and serve God and serve in a way that is as close as you could to the ways that God might go in a certain direction. You're not replicating, you're co-creating. All right, so love really gives us a tremendous key, an ability, which is something that we need to foster in ourselves. It is difficult to do so, though, if you're not able to focus out. You see, if you remember what I said at the beginning of tonight's show, you really can't enhance or increase your ability to love or even to be loved in some circumstances unless you're able to focus away from yourself. If you're selfish, you're not going to get there. And this is a problem, because a lot of people want to be loved, and some even say, in some respects, more academically than other than reality, but some ways they want to love, but they can't because they're too focused on themselves. And that's a real problem. And I wanted to spend some time in this first half talking about that problem, because it comes up for me all the time. Not necessarily in myself, although sometimes there, but more often in people asking me questions dealing with love. And they don't understand the nature of what they're asking or saying. And I think that because of the confusion about this, this is a good part of the show to use for that issue. Okay, so the big problem with people saying that they want to be in a loving relationship, they want to have others love them, and they want to love others, and on and on, is that they're thinking too much of themselves, even in the statements they make about that. And it's paradoxical. It's like, well, gee, I really want to love everybody else because I know it is a good thing. And I know that if I love everybody, then everybody's going to love me too. And that could make the world a better place. It's terrific. Except it's all about what I want to feel, what I want to have. And I'm not noticing what other people really need. That will help them to be better at loving themselves. And those are things that require wisdom, which is a very mental element to love. And unfortunately, when people are so focused on themselves, they don't have wisdom. They don't have the right motive in trying to love other people. So how do we get out of that? What is the answer? Because it's not a simple thing. Because if it were simple, everybody would be doing it, right? And there's obviously reasons why people aren't. So let me give you some answers. We'll talk about some more of the problems and more answers to those, etc. Some answers are this, that most people are having difficulty with love because, and this has to do with one of the, I have an email from somebody about this. I'll talk about it in a little bit. But they are afraid to give because they think that giving is going to, it's like a net, some game of some sort. Giving means they're going to lose something and not gain something. So love becomes a hollow, non-existent thing to them. And you might say, well, why would somebody be afraid of that? How could it hurt you to love others? Well, it could hurt if the expectation is that in giving, you get something back. Uh-huh. Interesting problem. Okay. So love is a weird thing because the desire to love is kind of antithetical to the desire to be loved. Yeah. Let me say that again without the fancy word. The desire to be loved goes against the desire to love. So if you really want to love others, which means give to them in wise ways that helps them to become giving in the same way to still others, not necessarily to yourself, by the way, because that would be the contradiction, then you're not thinking about or concerned about whether those people are at the moment loving you more or anyone is. Like, you're doing it for one person, but the third party, you want them to see you doing it so they'll love you more. You know, that kind of hypocrisy doesn't work either. There are some places in the astral world that sort of thing goes on a lot. But it doesn't work. So this is the conundrum. Too many people have this kind of paradigm. This is their way of functioning. I'll love as long as I get something back, and then that's cool. You know. But if I'm not going to get anything back, well, I'm not going to love anymore because what the heck? I'm losing something in the process. But love is exactly the opposite of that concept. So people that think that way, which is a large amount of people, which is way over the majority of people, are doing so in illusion. That means they don't really see or understand how it really works. And that's why I'm here, to tell you, maybe it works this way. You know, I'm not saying you have to believe it, but certainly this show is about thinking, right? It's to get people to think more about how things might work, right? You don't have to believe it, but it's a good thing to think about. All right. So here is the answer. The answer is, it's pretty simple, actually, that love is its own reward. You've heard that so many times, right? But you didn't really think about it, maybe. When we give in wise ways, it helps others to do the same. We become more conscious. That's a reward. We become the best way to describe it is we become joyful, which is a great feeling compared to not being joyful. And we develop a sense of closeness with our Creator, which makes us feel more immortal and overcomes our fears of death, which also covers many other fears. So ultimately, all these things come together just from the act of truly not the nonsense act, but the truthful act of loving. Wow. So there is the answer. Now, does that mean just because I said it, everybody who's listening to me, maybe everybody who they know are going to, who may tell people about this, are really going to do what I said? No, I don't expect that. But I'm hoping that some of you out there will experiment with this to see if it's true. Because if it's true, it's so easy to determine, right? I'm telling you the answer. So you should be able to set up various little experiments in your life. Or you maybe have good memories of the past where you can, you've already done this sort of thing and you can check it out as it happened before. Either way, that's okay. I don't care which way you do it, or both, or some other way. But the point is, you can check this out for yourself to find out whether I'm a nutcase or this is really the truth. And if it's true for you, now you've got a way to overcome these fears about being focused on yourself too much, which really, interestingly, causes us to become lonely, isolated, miserable. Instead of joy, we experience sorrow and forces in our life, and we feel distant from our own creator. All of those things come from a lack of lovingness on our part towards others. Wow. And just the very first thing I said about consciousness is a big hit. When someone's consciousness is lowered because they're self-focused and unloving, it creates a whole domino effect in terms of every part of their existence. Because who and what we are only comes from our consciousness. Our senses do give us information about the world around us. But the processing of that information into something that is meaningful and understanding comes through consciousness. And if we can't do that because we lowered our consciousness, we're going to be miserable, to say the least. And so hopefully this is making sense now. This is just the beginning of what I'm going to get into. But still, I hope that it makes sense that, the real problem with love is that we're in illusion about it, and we think that somehow giving to others in wise ways so that they can do more of the same is in some way a negative thing unless we get something back, which is just the opposite. If you try to get something back, if you desire to get something back, you're defeating yourself in the process, and you've already nullified the ability to do that. Whoa. That is a scary situation, isn't it? How many people are really doing it? A lot. How many of us, everyone that's listening, I know there's a lot of people out there right now listening, are doing that, and they don't understand that that's really causing a lot of their sorrow. It's making them less conscious. It's reducing the joy in their life. It's reducing their contact with their creator. Wow. These are big deals. So maybe the metaphysics of love is not such a small thing after all. It's actually a very big thing. It actually ties together so many elements of the existence and what it means to be human, especially in someone who is at the present time physically alive. Now, let's talk about that. What about people who live in other dimensions after they die from the physical? Well, we know there's an astral world. Some of you do, if you listen to some of the things I've explained. And you don't have a physical body anymore, but you still have an astral energy body, which is kind of different, but it still feels like you're pretty much the same person. And you have a little bit higher consciousness. So people tend to be more loving in the astral world at a relative scale to where they were when they were physically alive, because the physical senses overwhelm us, and the illusion that loving others is a loss unless you get something back, then that illusion comes more strongly with physical senses than it does just by having astral and monastic senses. That's because that's all you have left if you die from the physical world. And so some of the illusion goes away, and you tend to be more loving while you're in the astral world than you were while you were physically alive, just by the nature of the physics. It helps some Does that mean that everyone that goes on to the astral world just becomes like an angelic being, you know? Oh, I love all of it. No. As a matter of fact, there is some increase by nature. But that doesn't mean people respond to it. That doesn't mean people foster and grow it in themselves. And sometimes they lose it as quickly almost as they got it. So it isn't something that necessarily stays. And there's a lot of other physics issues that come into play that can cause a person to quickly diminish their consciousness, even though they may initially have increased consciousness after the physical death. So this is an interesting problem. But on an average, if you were to compare people over there compared to here, as they say, they are more conscious. They are more loving than we are. It's somewhat a more spiritual place. But that's the nature of going back, to eventually growing back. A person grows himself back into the full state of their soul. But you got to get over the illusions. It's better to do it while we're physically alive, because if we can overcome the illusions while we are physically alive, I want you to think about that. We can use all the senses and bodies that we come into incarnation with, and we can use these in ways to promote virtue, and to promote, one of the virtues is love. We can provide much more of it while we're physically alive in relative terms than we could after our death. Many people say, well, I'll just wait till after I die, then I'll be loving, and when life is easier, and I won't have to worry, and then I can believe some of the stuff you're saying, because I'll know that I'm not going to stop existing at my physical death and all this other stuff. Wait till then, that's a good thing. So in the meantime, you'll be miserable here. The meaning of your life will be diminished tremendously. And when you go on and live over there, you'll regret it. That's a good solution, though. No, it's a terrible solution. Well, it's one that many people do. I'm not going to deny that. But I'm suggesting that while we're here, this is a great time, a great place to overcome the illusion. It's not easy, because those fears and the constant doubts come into play, and the feeling like, well, gee, how do I know for sure? Well, one way is to experiment. One way is to actually try some of these things I'm suggesting by trying to become more conscious and consciously giving, more loving, with all the people around us, helping them to do the same, helping them in a wise way to become wise givers themselves, and so that the world becomes a better place for all while we are testing Niles' theory about this stuff. It's great. You can actually check it out. I'm encouraging you. The next week, let's make it Love Week, okay? People are going to go out and actually try this stuff, and let's see if it actually works. Now, I do it pretty regularly, so I know it works for me. But you try it and see if it works for you, because that's the way. Now, I got a few more minutes here in this before the break. I want to mention, and you notice I keep saying wise. Wisdom means that when you give something to someone, it helps them to become better givers themselves in wise ways. Giving someone something that they want or desire, but lowers their consciousness and reduces their ability to wisely give themselves, is a mistake, and a serious one, actually. So you don't want to do that. Now you could say, well, okay, but how do I keep myself from doing that? What do I do? The first thing is, you need to understand the difference between what people desire and what they need to be closer to God, to be closer to their creator, and to function more as a unit with the universe and with God, and to express in themselves the same kind of lovingness that you're trying to express in wise ways. If you start doing something that shows the opposite effect, stop. I mean, we all make mistakes, so just to say, oh, yeah, I made a mistake. You don't want to keep doing it because, well, I told them I would, but, well, just because you tell somebody you would doesn't mean you got to do it. Because if it's harmful, you made a mistake. You could explain it, explain why. better not to do it in the first place if you can. And how do you determine if it's doing what I'm saying? Well, you use your perceptions. You use your empathy. You are able to use your mind. You're able to see what's going on if you're careful and you observe and you look for the results. If you don't, then I'm going to say that you're not going to ever know, because it's not, you know, someone's not going to write you a note and say, well, yeah, you wisely gave to me, so now I'm wisely giving to all others. That's a rare event if somebody does that. You see, we have to be responsible for others. That's part of this whole process. Most people don't want to be, barely responsible for themselves. And I'm saying way beyond that. You're not only responsible for yourself, you're responsible for everything. Everything. And especially for those things that you choose to co-create with them, you're very responsible for. There are different levels. Some things you have less responsibility for because you're not much in control of those things. But the things that we create, we're very much in control of. And we have great responsibility in those areas. So it's something to really consider. Wow. How do you like that? Okay, so I hope that makes some sense. And there's a lot more to that than what I just said, but I'm giving you basics, things that you can use that are practical, I hope. You know, that some of this show is meant to get people to think. Some of it is meant to get people to act and to function in ways that is going to make this world a better place. Because if we don't make it a better place together, we're not going to be able to make it a better place, period. This is something we have to do together. So love becomes the glue that allows us to function in a way to improve the entire world and eventually universe. We can't live without it. No one person is going to do this themselves. It's really going to be done by all of us. And love is the way that we, and one of the ways that we accomplish this together. That's an important thought. Okay, when we come back, I'll go much deeper into this subject. I'll talk about some of these emails, tell you some other stuff, and it should be very interesting. We'll also talk about sexuality. Yes, we're going to get into that adult subject. And other factors that I think come into play when we're talking about love. So we will return in about 2 minutes and 10 seconds or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's hidden meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're speaking about, or I'm speaking about, the metaphysics of love, and hopefully the first part of this show made some sense to people. I know it goes by fast, but, you know, we got a little more time tonight, so I'm trying to slow it down just a little bit so that some of these ideas come through better. Maybe they are. I hope so. Okay, now, maybe I'll start with this one email. I have an email from, I won't give you his last name, or is it he or she? All right, Daniel? Yeah, okay. And, Daniel. And so Daniel has asked a question basically about love in the opposite, is love the opposite of fear? He doesn't think so. As a foundational premise, claiming that there's a number of books that actually state this. Well, I'll tell you, Daniel. It's not exactly that. It's more a, I would put it in this respect. Love is, as I said earlier, it is a way of being inclusive and close to others. It is fear that keeps people from loving, but fear is not the opposite of love. Fear is the cause of why love sometimes doesn't work in people's functioning. I call fear the enemy of the soul, because the soul itself is a more conscious being, and while we're fearful in this realm, especially in physical form, because we're an illusion, where our senses just don't tell us what's really going on around us, and we're not even able to understand the nature of the universe we live in very well. Science is right now about 95% inaccurate. It's kind of scary. Now, they always think they know everything, you know, and I'm a scientist from way back when, but the point is that they really don't. And so if science is like only 5% accurate, how much does the rest of the, you know, world think and know whatever is going on? They didn't know very little. But the important part about this is that while we're living in fear, we're unable to use the information that comes through in a way that's challenged by the minds in our bodies, and we're unable to take that information and determine truth and find love instead of emotional responses and find coordinated, intelligent responses to the physical world around us so that we can share with others in ways that are helpful. These things go out the window, because we react in a way that is self-protective, which means self-focused as well, and we forget about others, and we isolate ourselves. So that's the problem with fear and love. Love, it's hard to love anything while we're afraid. That's a true, and it doesn't matter what we're afraid about necessarily, but if you're in a state of fear, love becomes a more difficult state. You could, in theory, do it, but most people don't. So I think that hopefully answers that. But if you're listening, or for the rest of you who are listening, the question of love and what it really is about consciousness, and it's about inclusiveness. And so fears can be overcome if we keep focusing out and loving more, rather than it being the opposite of love. It's just an obstacle. Okay, so hopefully that makes some sense. Now, let me continue on with what tonight's show is generally about, which is the metaphysics issue. Some people have asked me, how come I make such emphatic statements, like in Life's Hidden Meaning, which is the textbook I wrote. Why do I say things like, well, if you really are intimately in love, in a sexual sense with someone, you need to be monogamous. And, of course, as I said in the earlier section, this is because the physics of the universe was designed this way. And I guess, you know, this the answer may not be satisfying to some people, but it's just that that's the way God decided to create the universe. Because if you assume that the physics of the universe works this way, and that's because God created the universe, then that's God's thought about it. And so when we don't have a monogamous situation in an intimate, sexually intimate circumstance of love, the results can be that the two people can have, you know, an exciting time of it in terms of their energy exchange. But it diminishes rather than increases their sense of self, and it causes a state of alienation over time, because they're trying to become more one with each other, but then they go on to other people the next day or the next hour or whenever it might be, because they're not monogamous, and these amplitudes and phases that in the waveforms that they're forming between each other are constantly being interfered with by establishing new ones or different ones. I guess both of which are new and different with other individuals, and that creates havoc with our astral nature, not to mention the other bodies as well, and it produces a distancing effect. The opposite of love. So you can be as sexual as you want, but if you're not monogamous, you can't be loving and sexual at the same time. Wow. That is a lot to think about, because I think a lot of people would find that very difficult. And some people would disagree with me and say, well, gee, I love five people and I have sex with every one of them every other day, you know. Well, that may be true, but what you perceive as love may not really be that, because you aren't becoming one with five people. You're probably becoming one with none. So instead of this unity, which is established through this great gift that we have, it's missing. Now, I've had people talk to me and say, well, what about then the question of, you know, some other species, like animals, that just randomly have sex or so. Well, they're not at the same level of consciousness, unless you really have a low consciousness. They're not human. They can't even understand what God is. I mean, they can love in some ways, but they can't love God. They can't love their creator, because they have no understanding of what that is. We are on a totally different level. We have a different level of response to everything. And except in the species that do form monogamous relationships, the rest of them are missing out. They're unable to form a oneness with at least one other being, like we can if we choose to. Now, the oneness that I'm talking about is through the intimacy of sexuality, but if you really want to get into the metaphysics of the thing, which I do tonight, why not? You know, that's the fun part. It also has to do with spiritual service. So if you're co-serving together and you're having sexual intimacy, you've hit the jackpot. But that can only come about through a monogamous relationship. And so you have some interesting problems here for those of you who disagree with me. And I'm not going to go into all the physics of this. For those of you who are really interested in this, you can go to chapter 7 in Life's Hidden Meaning. It's a big textbook, the one that you can use for a doorstop. It weighs about 4 pounds. And look in there, and I go into great detail. I have charts, I have drawings, because this is too complicated. to even explain, like over the radio. I mean, I can't show it to you. There's a lot of things that you really have to witness in terms of seeing how the energy flows, et cetera, that are in those diagrams and pictures. And so from that, you can gain a sense of how it really all works. Now, the other thing to do is to actually experiment with it. You know, if you think that this is really not true, then my suggestion is you spend a certain period of time being monogamous and see where that gets you. And I mean, but you have to do it with a person who wants to do it with you, and it has to be truly a loving and intimate relationship. And then try this with 5 or 10 or whatever number of people you want to do it with in a non-monogamous sense, and see what that gains you and how does that affect you, and compare those results with what's in the textbook. And I think you're going to find, I could be wrong about it, and if I'm wrong, let me know. But I think you'll find that what is in there turns out to be true. In other words, by your own experiments on yourself and your senses and what you've experienced, you'll find that it is exactly what I'm saying. Now, I think that the women, and I found this to be true, and I don't want to be too sexist here, but I think women have a better grounding in this than men do. I think they by nature have a better understanding than the men do, because men are sometimes more connected with the physicality issues than the emotive or emotional issues involved. And the emotional issues bring people closer to the realities of what I'm talking about than the physicalities do. But I think they both can relate. And so a guy who is having multiple partners, well, if he doesn't feel it emotionally, he will feel a difference in the physicalness anyway. Although I think it's a little easier for maybe women, some women. And I'm not saying all men are like this or all women are like this, but on an average, it might be true. So this is the thing to try. And if I'm wrong, right, just let me know. You know, you can give your own accounting of what you have experienced. When I was young, pretty darn young, there were a number of experiments that were being done. And one of the areas of my college days that I focused on, besides psychology and some other subjects, was in an area that dealt with sexuality. And they called it family life studies or something. They had some fancy word for it. Actually have a degree in that as well. I picked it up along the way. Why not? But there was an experiment done right at the time that I was going to school. It was a long time ago. I don't want to tell you how long. It was a long time ago. And the experiment was pretty simple. Professor in a family life studies department decided to get a bunch of students together who were having sex wildly anyway, and he just randomly asked them to start having sexual relations together, and he wanted to see what would happen over time. And he just charted the kind of relationships that people had, et cetera. And over time, this is going to maybe sound a little shocking, but over time, most of the people eventually developed monogamous sexual encounters. They found a person who they wanted to be with, and although the experiment was to do the opposite, they actually broke the rules of the experiment, and that's what happened. And so he came to that conclusion not necessarily because of metaphysics, but because that's what the social outcomes were of his experiments. That's pretty fascinating, I find, in and of itself. Most interesting. Now, what about sexuality in terms of developing a unique type of closeness? Some people have heard about, tantric yoga. Okay, what is that? Tantric yoga is a way of developing the sexual center, being the leading center, in trying to get the other centers to unify together to some extent, but by using the sexual center as the main center of focus. And there's two types. There's white which just means that you don't actually physically complete any sexual acts with somebody. And then there's the red, that you actually, you know, you're just having the full sexual thing. And so what is there about that that is valuable, and what is there that we might want to look at in some ways as being cautious about and other factors? Well, the value in it is that yoga means union. So you're trying to unify your senses. If you unify your senses, your perceptions increase, and then your consciousness could increase as well. So there's a real value to any kind of yoga if it's done for the right purposes and in the correct ways. But there's also some dangers and some problems. And one of the issues here that is important is that some people think that either one of these types of tantric yoga are good to do with just anybody. You got a problem, because if what I said earlier is true, then you got kind of a contradiction of, you know, well, I want to be unified in my senses so I can be more perceptive, so I can be more conscious. So I'm going to have sex with a lot of people using this tantric yoga to do that, which, of course, is going to cause the opposite effect. Okay. So these type of yogas can be effective if two people love each other, are sexually intimate, and they are seeking to enhance their closeness through the operation of the yoga itself. I don't recommend the kinds of yoga that where there's masses of people doing this sort of stuff. There's I've heard about this going on in a city nearby in Tucson, and I don't think that that's probably the wisest way to achieve higher consciousness. Generally speaking, the intimacy that is implied in sexuality comes from the uniqueness of the individuals themselves being the only sharing of the experience. Because, again, you break the monogamy rule otherwise, and you're now, the perceptions are being divided up, even though others may not be directly involved in some of the sexual activities. If you're all kind of in a big room or something, it's still bothersome and troublesome. And for most people, I don't think that's good for them. Okay, so that's a kind of unique circumstance that everybody's going to be attempting to do that. But for the people who will, it's certainly something to consider, but only under the circumstances as I described, I think. And you should check it out and see if I'm right about that. So it is true that tantric yoga can, for people who are serving and who are intimate, that it could be a benefit. I wrote another book called Afterlife Love. That in that book, the characters in the book actually practice tantric yoga, and some people get upset with me for writing that book, because they say, well, we don't want to know about this stuff. And I mean, it's not, you know, it's not that graphic, but it's graphic enough so that for a lot of people, they think, well, what's this guy? He's some kind of pervert or something writing this book. No, because it's based somewhat on a true story, and I want the people to really have, the reader to have the experience of what the characters are actually going through. So that's why, in that situation, it kind of goes against the rule of tantric yoga to some extent. And that, since it's a book after the fact, it's not obviously affecting these people's experiences at the time that they had it. So, but nonetheless, that is something to consider, and probably worthwhile for those who are really already on the spiritual path and seeking to unify their chakras or senses, and not only among the within each of their bodies. There's seven major chakras and a whole bunch of minor ones. But not only within their own bodies, but if you use the tantric yoga, you actually eventually unify your senses to the other person's. And that's a big part of the story that I wrote about. It's actually integral to the story. So it's really important that the sexuality is in there, or it wouldn't make as much sense. But for some people, they didn't like it at all, that it was there. Shouldn't be talking about sex if you're writing a spiritual novel. Okay, well, it's part of life, and it's part of the whole story. All right, so hopefully I've covered that. Now, what about love between people who are not intimate, maybe not involved in any sexual issues, but who have a co-service, that are spiritually disciplining themselves, maybe members of the same spiritual group, or they may call themselves an organization or a foundation. Or, it doesn't really matter what name they use, I don't care. But the point is, what about those people? And how does love act or interact in people who are doing co-service on a fairly important level, and they're doing it as part of, we'll call it spiritual discipline, where they're choosing to limit some elements of themselves that are selfish so that other parts of themselves will become less selfish and more virtuous. That's what they're trying to do. And if they're doing this, and that love is involved, of course, it should be involved, because they're part of each other's existence in the service. The service ties them together more than anything else, more than even the question of intimacy in a sexual sense. How does it do that? Because the service is the direct connection to God. And each is becoming a co-server with God, but through the other person's service as well. So they're developing what is known as a common intuitional or Buddhic consciousness. This is a big deal. And it's probably the single most beneficial thing that can come about because people are in co-spiritual service together. It's a thing that makes life magic and important. Now, one of the problems that people who are trying to spiritually discipline themselves have is that they don't oftentimes get the joy from their service because, in part, they don't have the love for their co-servers. Why not? Because their personalities come into play, and instead of trying to co-serve, they oftentimes are trying to prevent service, argue, have struggles in terms of control and power that are the opposite of love. Now, these kinds of things occur frequently enough that they should obviously be brought out in the open, and people should be working on them. How do you work on them? Well, by trying to give more to others so they can be better co-servers. Each person takes responsibility for all the other people who are doing anything even remotely connected to them. And that is the best way to overcome this problem. It's easier said than done, though. I will tell you that. I've seen it all too often go wrong. And so this is a critical area where we all need to be concerned with who are wanting to become more, we'll say, spiritual. If you want to become more spiritual, if you really are committing your life to creating a more virtuous world, and you're doing so, of course, with the assistance and co-service of other people, then this becomes a big issue. Because you don't want to in any way be hurting other people's service. You want to be helping it by taking responsibility for not only yourself and your service, but for others. And helping them to do the same for you. That's the key for overcoming that particular kind of problem. And there's a lot of little things about it. Again, I refer you to Life's in Meaning, Chapter 12. There's some things in there that might help you. But even more than that, call me or email me or something if you're really having problems with one or more people in this respect, because this is a critical element and it needs to be solved because there's so few people who really are willing to give on that level than to have them in conflict with their other givers that they're supposedly co-serving with. So it has to be resolved quickly. Because it's very destructive, and it prevents those who are most capable of improving this world from operating in that way. And that's a terrible thing to have happen. So those are the kinds of things in love and the metaphysics of that are particularly, we'll say, disturbing to me. And I would like to do everything I can to be of some service for those of you who might be in some way having that kind of trouble. Now, not everybody who's listening to me is that relevant to at this stage. But if it is, let me know. I'll try to help. And maybe others that I'm aware of can also be of help as well. Finally, let's talk about love in terms of the general nature, the general state of it in terms of Earth, where we live right now. I've only got a few minutes here left, but I want to cover this area. This planet is basically a non-loving planet. Oh, I know. I know a lot of people will disagree with me. There always was Mother Teresa and others who did great things. But the fact of the matter is we're far from a sacred planet. And in fact, we're very, very dark and tremendously in conflict. You know, a quarter of the countries or more are ruled by tyrannical dictators. And even the countries that claim to be democratic have tyrannies in them and serious problems. This is not a friendly world. And love is not an easy thing to develop. Love between nations is seldom real. When it is, it's fragile. Love within nations and between the people of whole countries is weak and oftentimes turned on its head through tyranny and destruction. We live in a world right now that is an agonizing state, with a couple thousand years of a religion that promoted love, which is the Christian religion. It has not really made that much of a difference. Now, I will tell you, in my opinion, in some countries, love is more prevalent than others. The more free the country is for the citizens to be able to think and take action, the more usually loving it is. The more willing the people who are free are willing to give to others who they have absolutely nothing to do with. So that's a good thing in itself. And hopefully, that will continue to be true. But as countries become more tyrannical, and they are moving in that direction in some cases, I think the United States is, love may disappear or at least dissipate. And that's a frightening idea, a terribly frightening idea. Now, some people think that the artificiality of us, quote-unquote, as a nation, the United States is an example, getting along more friendly with some hostile nations, supposedly, makes a better world. That's just superficial. It's not real love, because love is wise giving. It isn't giving because you don't want to have any enemies. It's giving because you want to help others to learn how to become friends. We're not doing that yet. Not even close. If you think going over and having a bunch of people listen to our president say about all the bad things we did makes for a loving relationship, it doesn't. What it does is it's maybe an apology, but it's a wrongly placed one. The more important things are, what can you give others that will help them to become wise-giving themselves? And so far, that has not materialized. I'm hoping that it will. But it is something we all should be concerned about, because it's not an easy subject. As a matter of fact, it's one that is so complicated that I wish I had more time to go into it. Our world, though, is in deep trouble. Deep, deep trouble. It's getting worse, not better. And I expect that love is going to become more of a, we'll say, an abstract subject than a reality for some time, like maybe the next 10 years or so. I hope not, but I see that there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about what's happening on a mass scale. Now, are there planets that are way beyond Earth? Yes. That love is everywhere? Yes. Where the problems that we have within and between nations, do they exist? No. No, they don't. this is something that is peculiar to who and what we are at the present time. We're going very fast, but we're also not necessarily moving more towards God all the time. Just be aware of that. Now, I wanted to mention a couple of things, and we're just running out of time here. If you still would like to get some soul balance, that's the product that balances all the centers. A whole bunch. You get 135 tablets with 24 capsules and another 24 capsules. You get 48 capsules and plus the tablets and all this stuff. You take it in a certain way. It's tremendous. It has a tremendous effect on improving the overall health of a person. So if you want more information, you can call 602-472-5127, Life Balance Association, and you can get some. If you want to know more about it, they'll tell you more about it. And also, let's see, that came and went. I was just looking at something that was already happening or has happened. Oh, yes. I'm still using ideal cell sorption resveratrol, as well as our animals around here, and it does work. If you believe that you will, or you think you might want to try it, please give it a try because it really works. Take about one or two of these capsules a day, and you start looking and feeling younger. And I'm not kidding you. That's the truth. That's what happens. It also may treat certain things, but we don't say it does. You can read about that in the literature. It's great for pets. I think it works as good or better on pets, especially dogs or cats, than it does on people. And it's on sale right now. You can go to foreveryoungproducts.com, foreveryoungproducts.com, and you can read about it and see if it's something you might want to try. You can call 800-777-7850 if you would like to get some of that. And now, I've got about another minute here. Let me tell you, let's wind up today's show. Hopefully, this has made more sense. There's all kinds of areas I didn't cover, dealing with love and the metaphysics involved. But if you understand its basic nature, basically what's really going on, it'll make more sense now to try and experiment with it in your own life and see if you can enhance or increase the amount of love in your life. And see if you can do so by helping others to do the same, by being a wise giver. You will increase your consciousness, and the benefits are real, and you shouldn't be expecting others to love you in reverse or exchange. Because if that's what you're asking for or thinking or hoping to get, you're in illusion, and the results will not be good. I promise you that. But the results will be amazing if you go the other direction. And you follow some of the principles that I suggested and outlined in today's show. Well, we're out of time for right now. And hopefully this has made some sense to all of you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.